Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
How do you want to be remembered? When it comes to Isabella Stewart Gardner, it's a bit of a complicated question. She froze an entire museum of her life in time, but the details of that life in the 100 years since her death have also been carefully curated. Now, a new fictional account of her story presents her, let's say, more fully. Here to talk more about that as part of our local authors series is Emily Franklin, the author of the upcoming novel, The Lioness of Boston, which it releases on April 11th. Emily joins us here in Studio 2 now. Welcome, Emily.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm reading the book, and I'm actually thinking, okay, is this fiction or is this a fuller telling of who she really was? Do you know what I mean?
I do. I think I tried to stay very true to the backbone of her life. So history unfolds as it unfolded. The time frame is how it happened. But in terms of my lens for this novel, I really felt that she was a feminist before feminism. She was and became a celebrity before celebrity culture. And she was an outcast who really triumphed over her misfit position in life. And so I had to have a little bit of fictional allowance as I was writing. And so she was friends with, you know, Henry James and John Singer Sargent and all of these famous artists and writers. But like the dialogue and the letters that are in the novel are my own creation.
So there's a whole bunch you got to there, and the friendships, the sort of the intellectual life of Boston at the time, the history of Boston at the time. We are going to get to that in a minute. And I'm going to say right now, I am not going to shy away from some spoilers. However, none of them will be spoilers that make the book not worth reading, right? And one of the things that really struck me, I've heard of this book being sort of referred to as a feminist retelling. I didn't feel that way. She was a feminist,
yes,
right?
Yes.
At a time when she wasn't supposed to be. And so it didn't feel like a feminist retelling. It felt like a telling of a feminist.
Right. I was trying to shine a spotlight on her and figure out, we all know the biggest spoiler is she wound up opening a museum.
So
Not a spoiler.
You can walk
we
down
know
there
that.
Today.
But how did she get there? And what was her vision? And what obstacles were in her way? And so defying what people expect of you is a feminist action. And she did that in many ways, even though it came at a personal cost. And, you know, she suffered a bunch of personal tragedy and really overcame that and tapped into her intellectual life and herself. And in doing so, perpetuated more of the feminist, you know, she would not probably call it an agenda, but it was certainly something that was a through line as I wrote this novel.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a feminist agenda. It felt like a middle finger between her and a Boston society that just did not want her to have a brain.
Right. Well, I think Boston then and sometimes now can be a pretty impenetrable place. I think when she was 20 years old, she moved here. She was new.
From New York.
From New York. She was certainly born into privilege, and there were expectations that she would be welcome into high society in Boston. But Boston really did not welcome her, and she then had to figure out what was she doing with her days if she was shunned, you know, from all of the social events, what was she to do? And then when you add on top of that some personal losses that she, you know, had later on in her life, in her early life, in her motherhood, she had to figure out what her life's purpose was.
Were there any relationships in here in this book? And again, we're speaking with Emily Franklin. The book is coming out April 11th. It's The Lioness of Boston. It's a fictionalized version of the life of Isabella Stewart Gardner.
Yes.
Anything that's pure fiction?
So I'm sure there are things that are pure fiction because it is, you know, it's a fiction, but, you know, it's fiction. It's not a biography. But for example, Isabella Stewart Gardner in this novel goes to the first Impressionist exhibit in Paris. Now, the exhibit unfolds on the page the way that it did in real life, although with my artistic, you know, vision of that. But it happened in Paris. This is an incredible group of artists, including, you know, Bertha Morisot and Renoir and Monet and Manet and Pissarro. Now, Isabella Stewart Gardner was in Paris at the time. She didn't actually attend that exhibit. But I had her there because it furthers, again, as one has to do writing a novel, where how she was moving through her life and becoming more independent and seeing other women, other artists doing their own thing. How could she do that in her life? So I wanted both to sort of show this scene unfolding in front of her and show her able to connect with other artists and coming away from that exhibit thinking, what would she do? What was her role? And also eliminating the fact that of that group of artists, Bertha Morisot is the least well-known. And yeah, she was the only woman.
Not at one that, that I had heard of.
Exactly. And she was the only woman there. But she's actually featured in so many amazing museums in this country and other places.
Okay. So I want to kind of touch on three things that come through the story now and that I think will kind of penetrate our awareness of this Isabella Stewart Gardner who has been preserved and curated. So, what's fascinating about reading a book of her as a woman? Is she is, how do I explain this? She is so synonymous with a carefully cared for institution, a building that she's the one that said, if this piece of paper was on the table this way, it stays on the table this way mm-hmm. in perpetuity. And in fact, you've got stuff at the beginning of the book of her saying, oh no, I said the picture stays on the table this way, right. So it stays on the table right. this way, because she fought so hard to get the picture on the table in the first place, right? Yes. So it is an act of defiance in the book that the museum is preserved so carefully the way that it famously is now. And yet, part of what is fascinating about reading a book about her whole life is she can be separated from the institution. She can have sex. She can bleed. She can be mad. She can cry. She can miscarry. She can cheat on her husband. She can do all these things that a person can do that a building can't. And I wonder how that spoke to you. That separated her from the institution for me.
Yes. I mean, we are familiar with the building and the courtyard and this incredible collection of art. And many people maybe only know the museum from the heist, from what was taken from it. And if they can learn anything through that, it's these empty frames that hang there. And I think, you know, my take on that is she wanted to preserve this space because it shows who people really are and memory. And so part of what I was doing in the novel was really exploring the idea of memory and what we keep with us, how will we be remembered, and all of those things. And in terms of, you know, giving her life on the page, we think of these historic figures as just a textbook or a building or a black and white photograph in a bustle and top hat or, you know. But she did. You know, of course, she loved people. She cried. She was really hurt. She was rejected. She had sex. She was a mother. She was a friend. She all those things. And so I really wanted to give that life on the pages of The Lioness of Boston.
So I'm going to ask you to read a little bit of a passage now. And we picked this passage for two different reasons. Somewhere sort of mid-book, and it's she and her husband, and they're witnessing a major historic event. So let me just have you read this little bit.
Jack was by my side as the Boston streets seemed to explode with color. We rushed in our bedclothes to the bay windows in the living room. Below, on the street, were throngs of cattle, masses of people shouting. Down the street, I could see flames licking a few mansard rooftops with their sloping sides. The fireboxes, I said. The squat red boxes perched cheerfully in various places in the city. Jackie had liked to hold my hand and go around them. There must not be anyone with a key, Jack whispered in horror. They kept the fireboxes locked, giving only certain citizens keys. It had seemed reasonable. Where are the water horses? Jack placed his hands on the window, shocked. I read earlier this week they're ill. Epizootic flu, the paper said. I stood on tiptoe and then climbed onto a chair and could see farther away an entire block of flame, the reflection rippling in the river. We'll be like Chicago, I said, as I noticed people coming out of their houses to spectate. Jack turned to me. It will be one for the books.
So it was striking, of course, when I read it, because we had already booked a segment that we wound up doing yesterday on the Great Boston Fire of 1872, a fire that I didn't know about and you captured in this book. I use it, though, as representation of a time in history that I did not understand was so rich. And I've read, I've been doing tons of reading about the 1800s in Boston.
Yes.
Across a ton of nonfiction books.
Right.
On Radio Boston over the last couple of years. But there was something about the story you tell and the way she collects people.
Yes. Well, she was a misfit. And I think what struck me even as a teenager when I visited the museum actually 2 weeks before the heist and was very haunted by her, and I think that's one of the reasons I chose to write this novel, is that she was a misfit who collected other misfits. And so I was really taken with the idea that she created sort of a found family in many ways. And she was surrounded by Boston becoming Boston as she is becoming herself. And so we've got the Boston Symphony Orchestra starting. We've got the Swan Boats opening. We've got Mass General Hospital. We've got Harvard Medical School moving from Back Bay to Cambridge. We have so much happening. And she's becoming friends with Charles Eliot Norton, who became the first professor of art history. All of these things happening at the same time. And crossing paths with Longfellow and...
Yes, the intellectual yes. life of the city and the region that you lay out. I didn't put it together how much of the intellectual heartbeat, not only of the region, but of the country was pulsing here at the time. Talk about that a little bit.
Right. Well, I mean, one of her neighbors was Julia Ward Howe, you know, who wrote Battle Hymn of the Republic. She becomes friends with Julia and her daughter, Maud. Maud's father, you know, helped found Perkins School for the Blind. I mean, there's just so much happening in Boston and so much artistic life. Oscar Wilde is coming through. He's giving lectures. So many people were gathering for luncheons or meeting in various lecture halls, and she begins to host lectures at her Beacon Street house where she lived before she moved to what is now the Gardner Museum.
Okay, so I have to confess, and we are speaking with Emily Franklin. The book is The Lioness of Boston. It comes out on April 11th. It is a fictionalized telling of the life of Isabella Stewart Gardner. I am so distracted by something you said a minute ago, I'm almost having trouble having the conversation. You said you were at the museum 2 weeks before the theft.
I was. I was a senior in high school, and I took an art history class, and we went, and we had to write a paper while sitting in the museum. It was actually a week and a half. I know exactly when it was. It was the Wednesday, the week before the heist on the 18th, and I wrote my paper in the Dutch room. And so I was haunted both being there because I used to go there as a kid and be I was just in awe of the courtyard and this idea that you could collect chairs and paintings and sculptures. I had never seen anything
like
it.
Which she did.
Which she did, and she kept them right there. But after that, after the heist, I was really, I would say, haunted by these empty frames that were right where I was sitting. I wrote my paper on Storm of the Sea of Galilee, and that's gone, and we don't know what happened to it. But I'm more fascinated with the idea that that grief, that memory, is still there. So we have the memory of the art that was there. We can read about that picture, but we can't see it anymore. But we can see where it was.
Where it was.
And we can see who collected it and who decided to put it there. And so there's so many layers to her vision of art and meaning and memory and artists and collecting. And she collected people and she collected things.
Is that why you wrote the book?
I think so. I think as a writer, I'm very focused on memory and... it's something that I keep coming back to, you know, what do we keep and what do we let go of, both as we walk through this life and after we're gone.
So what else did you learn about women of the time, art of the time?
I learned, you know, certainly at the beginning of this novel, there's some scenes with the Mean Society girls. That's always been the case.
I mean, it is right out of Mean Girls. It
sure
really is.
Except with less comfortable
high school,
clothing.
Yes. I would not have been surprised.
I know. But, you know, they were also wearing corsets. Maybe they just needed some
just
air.
Just made them ordinary.
But I really learned about art acquisition. I learned, again, how we find objects and ideas and people that are important to us and how we hold them close, how we show them to other people. And one of her visions was really making art accessible to the public. And so I love that idea, and it's something that I hope is conveyed in the novel.
Do you like her? Love her? Indifferent? She was just...
This whole novel, the Lioness of Boston is a love letter to the museum and a love letter to Isabella Stewart Gardner. I think she probably would have, at turns, you know, wanted to be my friend and also been, you know, cutting and said all sorts of inappropriate things. And that's probably what was so fun about her. I think she spoke her mind and was a pretty wild and individual person.
And she really did walk a pair of lions.
We don't know. There's a sketch. There's a sketch of her in her full getup walking lions. And so that is definitely in the novel. How could I not put it in there?
All right. Emily Franklin, author of the upcoming book, The Lioness of Boston, which chronicles the life of Isabella Stewart Gardner. It comes out April 11th. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.